I'm Chris Farrell from the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast, a wacky weekend morning show, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out right now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and the opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of Play Comics, where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. As always, I'm Chris, and today I'm here with David Weinberger from Shonen Flop to talk about something that I honestly tried. I have no idea what's going on. David, how are you? Because my brain is broken.
I am likewise in a bit of a broken brain state. It's been quite a day myself, but I am always happy to take some time out of my busy day to talk about the most bizarre adventure known to man. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, in fact.
Now, looking at this, this is something I did not realize a while ago was a game based on a comic, although I honestly have no idea why, because, I mean, just look at it. Of course it is. And I had started to watch the anime before I needed to for the show for anything, just because I had heard good things. And I mean, my wife couldn't really get into it. Part of that was the violence level of it. Part of it was just, she didn't care. And so I watched a lot of it over the past few days to get ready for this episode with you. And I have basically no idea what's going on.
That, to be honest, is fair. But hopefully I can help guide you through what exactly was going on in the series that led to this game.
Yes, please, because I really want to know. The stuff that I saw was so cool. I just want to know where it's coming from.
Okay, so let me take you from the top. So one thing to really know about JoJo is it's kind of like a soft anthology series. And I say that in that each of the series are very distinct, but there are some tangible connections where I would say it's all ever so included that you can't really jump to different parts and really get a good experience out of it. You can get a decent one, but it's not like the author's intention, of course. And so JoJo just changes protagonists and supporting cast with every single series. Each one usually runs for about 2 to 3 years, and it was published in Shonen Jump, the manga that, you know, had series like Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, and Naruto or Bleach. And so JoJo's actually started airing, I think, in either the 80s or 70s. And so part one was about this dude named Jonathan, who had a brother, an adopted brother named Dio. And so Dio is just this really huge asshole. He kills his dog, he steals the first kiss from his girlfriend, and he's just an overall really bad person. And as they grow older, they actually find this magic mask. And what they find out is if you wear the mask and put blood on it, it will turn you into a vampire. And so Dio actually turns himself into a vampire, and Jonathan has to learn this kind of magical, finger quotes, breathing magic called Haman, or Ripple, depending on your translation. And it kind of makes use of your breath to give you energy. And so this is set in like Victorian era London, like 1800s, where he's fighting Dio and ultimately wins. And so what happens is that they're on a ship, and Dio manages to get on the ship after Jonathan first fought, he beat him by decapitating him. But since Dio is a vampire, he manages to survive his decapitation, and he attacks Jonathan with one of his minions, and the ship goes down. And we think that's the end of Dio. There's then part two, where there's his grandson, Joseph, and he has to fight these like evil super vampires. Like, these are the vampires that eat the vampires called the Pillar Men. And that doesn't really tie in anything, but you just learn about how Joseph is kind of this trickster character. You know, he kind of cheats his opponents. He predicts things that they're going to say. He just kind of pulls things out of his ass because he's just like this very luck-based character. And so He eventually has a daughter who has a grandson named Jotaro. Jotaro is the main character of Part 3. And so something that's unique about this series, that's unique for Part 3 and Part 4, is that other characters from other parts play a really big part in it. So in this case, Jonathan is the one who comes to Jotaro, because Jotaro's in jail, because he's just kind of like this high school hoodlum, and tells him, "You, this like spirit that you've been so scared of is something called a stand." And so this is something that's introduced in Part 3, and they just kind of get rid of the magic system from the first two parts because it just wasn't as interesting. And so what stands are a manifestation of your psychic energy, and they can take a lot of different forms. So in Jotaro, if you may have noticed that in the game, how people kind of can summon these figures to fight with them, how there's like this giant ghost that punches a lot with Jotaro. Joseph has like these purple vines, or like the dude with the long hair, Polnareff, has this night guy. Those are all their stands. And so it's really about stands fighting other stands, because there's a few rules. First of all, you can only see a stand if you are a stand user. So not everyone actually has the ability to use a stand. The other one is only stands can hurt stands. So even if you could see a stand, if you don't have a stand, you can't do anything about it. And the most notable thing that really adds a really an interesting element of suspense is that if your stand takes damage, you get the damage in return. So if someone stabs like your stand, you get stabbed, or you get the exact same equivalent wound. And those are really the cornerstones. And then stands have all these different abilities. Like some of them can manipulate water. Some of them are just really good with swords. And then there's like these really weird ones where one is like concept of magnetism, or one can control sand. And so really it can just be whatever you want. And it really gave the writer a lot of creative freedom to just create any kind of scenes he wants, making use of our main cast versus these enemies while they're trying to pursue Dio. Because essentially what has happened is Dio has awakened his stand. And so by doing so, it's been a little bit since I've watched the series. So essentially what happened is Dio actually takes his decapitated head and puts it on Jonathan's body. And so by doing so, they have like this bloodline connection with both Jotaro and Joseph, in that Dio, they're aware Dio is back. And Dio coming back actually has kind of inflicted a curse on Jotaro's mom. And so if they don't defeat Dio in a certain amount of time, Jotaro's mom is going to die from this curse that Dio has kind of set upon them when he started activating his powers. And so they have to go to Egypt to find Dio, you know, and really just defeat him and end his blight on the Joestar family once and for all, which is where the JoJo comes from, because everyone's name is usually starts with Joe, and then their last name is Joestar. For most of this series, there's sometimes it changes, like Jotaro is Jotaro, but still like a JoJo. And then that's how the game is based, is on their adventures of trying to find and defeat the vampire Dio to free Jotaro's mom, or Josuke's mom, from the curse. Sorry. The main character of Part 4's name is Josuke, and that's my favorite part, so that's one that I kind of have most active on mind, and they just have kind of similar names, especially because all the characters' names start with Joe. But yeah, that is essentially kind of the plot of what the game is based on and how the powers work. I know I might have rambled a little bit, so let me know if I need to clarify anything.
No, that's a much better summary than I could have come up with, and things are definitely starting to make a little bit more sense for me. One of the things that I really noticed while watching the anime was how many musical names people had.
Okay, so yeah, so that's actually, I would say, one of the most iconic things about JoJo is that the guy who created JoJo, his name, Araki. So Araki just loves music, and he names everything after music. And actually, Part 3 has some of the least things named after parts. Like, the main characters, Hermit Purple, Silver Chariot, Star Platinum. The idea of having characters not really with names kind of goes away. Like, for instance, Josuke, the name who's a main character Part 4, his is Crazy Diamond. And so his our teammates are The Hand, which is a pun of the band, and Echoes, and you meet Killer Queen, who has attacks like Sheer Heart Attack, and another one Bites the Dust. So he really, really goes after this part into just saying, we're going to name everything after music.
Well, I'm really glad that's something coming from him and not just something coming from people who are translating this into English.
No. Actually, that's one of the pains of translating the series, is he's using all these copyrighted names, so they have to come up with puns. Like, Crazy Diamond is Shining Diamond. Killer Queen is Deadly Queen. Bad Company is Worst Company, and it just gets really silly. There's one character literally called Vanilla Ice, and who's another vampire under Dio. And so they translate his name as Cool Ice, as like a joke on Cool as Ice, the Vanilla Ice movie.
I never would have thought the band names would have had to worry about copyright stuff like that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is like, you know, they don't want Vanilla Ice suing someone because literally they have a character named Vanilla Ice.
You know, Kaylee was also really confused when they started playing Roundabout for the closing credits. Like, how did they pull that off?
Oh, man. Did you get when they did Walk Like an Egyptian?
No, I didn't get that far.
So when they make it to Egypt, they switch the credits to Walk Like an Egyptian.
Oh, man. See, now I'm going to have to keep watching this.
Yeah. To be honest, part three is actually one of my least favorite parts, and it's just kind of a slog. But once they finally make it to Egypt, it really picks up again.
So what I was able to find on Hulu was one that looked like it started in 2012. Is that like the actual beginning of it, or is that like translated date? Or okay.
So 2012 is when the first anime adaption started. So that was the first part is called Phantom Blood. And they did that with Battle Tendency, which is the part after, which are the two first parts. And those two, like I was saying, they don't have stands, and they just were a lot of the themes that are iconic in JoJo were really kind of in development in those parts. And part three is really when what people would recognize as JoJo's Bizarre Adventure really started, which is known as part three is called Stardust Crusaders. And then Stardust Crusaders ran from 1989 to 1992.
So me being somebody who has never really read manga outside of looking at stuff for the show here, and, you know, admittedly, I have generally jumped to the anime because that's just easier for me to consume. Is that kind of a delay a normal thing? Because normally I've thought that I've seen things coming out a little quicker based on when the manga was coming out.
So JoJo's been a challenge. I think part of it is the names, but also just because it's so large that, you know, you really have to agree to do the whole thing. So before, and I've actually wondered that too, before 2012, no one had just said, like, we're going to adapt the entire series. Stardust Crusaders actually had a 12-part OVA series that ran in the 90s. And there was a movie about Phantom Blood that was so hated by Araki that it never was released anywhere. So it's considered, like, a lost movie. But otherwise, yeah, there's really not been any actual anime adaptions until 2012 when they really got serious about wanting to adapt it into an anime. And so it's been going on. They're actually up to part five, and now we're just waiting for part six to get an adaption.
So presumably we're not going to get the beach episode that's just made for filler.
No. The series is actually, it's pretty in line. Like, that's the problem, is that Stardust Crusaders had a lot of filler, just because I think Araki had, like, a lot of cool ideas he wanted to do, even if it wasn't really for the sake of the plot. He just wanted to, like, he was like, I have this cool stand thing, let's do a lot of fights. And it really does drag the show down. And to be honest, in the anime adaptation, it would have been nice if they cut one or two of these fights.
So I guess the main thing here for me is, could I have maybe... I mean, you already said that I should watch parts one and two before three, but could I have started really anywhere else?
So I would say the only JoJo part where you probably could watch it without knowing a lot about our JoJo is part five, because that one's kind of isolated. And then the interesting thing is part seven is actually in a different universe, so you could actually read that one as well, but it has a lot of, like, references, like kind of, I guess, rewards for being a long-term reader that you wouldn't notice. Like, since it's in a different universe, it's all new characters, but sometimes a character will make a reference or as an homage to a character in the old universe that you just wouldn't notice because you're not familiar with who that character is. So it's like unfortunate, but it really is just like, you got to go through the whole thing from start to finish if you want to get the most optimal experience out of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Although that being said, I like going back to the beginning, so that's not really a turnoff for me.
Well, that's good.
Honestly, I'm just glad that I started watching this where I needed to start watching it. Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen talking to a few people, not really understanding, it didn't turn me off because, like, the fight scenes were good enough to keep me in. The art was beautiful enough to keep me in. And eventually I think I would have gotten there, but I mean, talking to you definitely sped up me understanding things.
Well, I'm happy to help. But yeah, naturally, the art really gets a lot better. Part 5 was beautifully animated. They took a lot of extra time. I think they took like an extra year to animate it, and you can really tell.
If anybody has ever heard me talking about anime that looks like it was drawn with Jolly Ranchers, this is what I'm talking about. On that note, I think we should drop some promos for a few other shows, and then we'll come back.
Sounds good to me.
Unsure if your Spider-Man is amazing or spectacular? Infinitely confused by Crisis on Infinite Earths? Or does the mere thought of X-Men continuity make you tremble? Then 4Panel is the podcast for you. Join me, Andrew, and my co-host Robin Mick as we guide you through the weird and wild world of comics. We'll talk about the secret origins of your favorite characters, delve into the craziest events of comics past, and review the hottest new graphic novels that you might have missed. That's 4Panel, a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, I'm Anthony.
And I'm Dr. Issues.
And we're hosts of Capes on the Couch, the podcast where comics get counseling.
Superheroes don't always get to go home happy. That's where we come in.
We offer psychiatric and mental health analysis of comic book characters.
So check us out at capesonthecouch.live and across all social media platforms at Capes on the Couch.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So, David, this game, it does suffer from the dreaded, it was released on PlayStation.
Yeah.
Like original PlayStation. They're just not as good. Thankfully, we have a Dreamcast version, which takes care of things a little bit better.
Yeah. And that's the version I emulated was a Dreamcast version.
That's the one that I played. I mean, admittedly, not as much as I would have liked to, because it took me forever to find a Dreamcast in my house, which was really weird considering lots of things. But this game was made by the same humans who worked on Street Fighter 3. And you can really tell that they knew what they were doing. Capcom as a company really knows what they were doing. And just really playing into the fact that Dreamcast was made partly to be able to handle the Sega arcade games.
Yeah. I would say, though, in terms of fighting games, the one that reminded me most was, I think, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, which is probably one of the retro fighting games I've had the most hands-on experience, just because it's so popular at the arcades. And so that's really, in terms of mechanics and both kind of the way that those sprites were presented, is what I thought of.
That one definitely fits into, I mean, you can really tell that Capcom, I mean, love it or hate it with this, Capcom finds a thing that works and rolls with it. And yeah, this stuff just really works.
For sure.
But in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, the one thing that you get in the Dreamcast version is you get both of the arcade versions, because this was released as two different versions in arcades. You had JoJo's Adventure, and then you had the updated one, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. So on Dreamcast, you can choose which one of those versions you want to play. And I mean, it's your normal fighting game update stuff. You get some extra characters, you get a few little bits of code cleaned up and stuff. And generally, the update one is better, because if the earlier one wasn't, the updated one is better, because why bother to update if your first one is perfect anyway?
Yeah, why mess with perfection?
But over on PlayStation, they kind of squished the versions together. And I mean, part of that is because PlayStation just couldn't hold as much. I think that was honestly the main thing.
Did you, by the way, have a chance of checking out like the PS3 Xbox 360 version?
I did not.
I didn't either. I wish I had a way of playing it. But yeah, they said that they like put in, they kind of, it's like the best of both worlds in terms of all the different versions of the game that existed so far, and they added like online multiplayer and up the resolution and stuff.
Unfortunately, it's one of those things where they took them out of the store and you're not getting it now.
Oh, yeah.
At all.
It's true.
Unless you know reasons that I don't know how to pull off, because I haven't bothered to look yet.
Well, you probably emulate it. Xbox 360 and PS3 emulations actually improved quite a bit.
Oh, I didn't need to know that. This is going to be dangerous.
Yeah, I think like they made Persona 5 on the PS3 emulatable, and Sega got very upset, or Atlas, which Sega owns, because they're like, that's not good for our sales of Persona 5 if people can just play it on their computer.
Yeah, well, Atlas stuff gets to be expensive, so I don't care. I'd still rather own the regular copy.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've always been a big fan of emulation, especially because you don't have to deal with the hardware, though. I'm like a diehard PC person. I even have like an HDMI splitter, so my Switch will output to my computer monitor because I don't own a television.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
One of the good things I really liked about this game was that you don't really have to understand JoJo's Bizarre Adventure at all to have fun with it. And granted, a lot of that is because it's a fighting game, and if you can't have fun with a fighting game, you're not going to have fun with it, whether you understand what's going on or not.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But when you're looking at the Dreamcast version of this, I mean, it's your super basic, hey, let's go fight everybody, the end. Which, I mean, say what you will about that. If you have a fun fighting game, nobody cares about that. And if the fighting game aspect of it sucks, then suddenly everybody hates you.
I feel like Mortal Kombat's really the only fighting game with a good story mode anyway.
I mean, if you want to count Smash Brothers, then Brawl had a really good story mode.
The Subspace Emissary, it was okay, but it did get very grindy. And I get why he didn't want to have voice acting, but it would have been nice instead of all those like miming, you know?
Yeah. Over on the PlayStation, though, one thing that they did do was something called Super Story Mode, which, unfortunately, I was not able to check out for myself.
Aw.
The Super Story Mode for PlayStation lets you play through, I forget which series is.
Stardust Crusaders.
Probably, that sounds right. So I think it's cool to have something like that where you can actually have a story mode in this, maybe get an understanding of what's going on if you care about the characters. Or, you know, if you're not just grabbing this because it's a Capcom fighting game, if you're grabbing this because it's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, then you can actually have something where you can see the manga and the anime building up into itself.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, like it is a great experience, though I do wish it was a bit more abridged. But I do wonder how the story mode of the game, because it's probably it is probably that abridged, because they're not going to include all these obscure stand users that show up, you know, just for one episode.
One thing for me, not being too familiar with the series or anything, is this game has like 22 characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the updated version. So I have no idea, like, who characters are that could have been left out, who characters are that really should have been put in that weren't, anything like that.
Mm-hmm. So I believe that they didn't, looking at the character list, I wouldn't say there's anyone that, like, instantly I would say, oh, why didn't they include that? And they definitely have some more obscure choices. One thing it would have been cool is if they included characters from parts 1 and 2, like, even if I think they included young Joseph, but they didn't include young Jonathan, who Dio's body stole from. So that would have been an interesting thing. And I don't think, since Joseph has access to Hamon, I don't think that was really a mechanic in the game, which is a little bit disappointing just because he does have this like fighting technique that no one else can use.
That would have been really cool, too. I don't know how they would have really been able to pull it off, but that's why I don't work for Capcom.
That's true.
But with 22 characters, you do have a pretty wide range of people you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I am not too versed on Japanese names, so I can't look at these and figure out what kind of representation they have gender-wise or anything.
So that is one of the problems of the series. Is there's not a very strong female presence until really part 6. Part 5 has the first part to have like a real serious main character that's a stand user. And then part 6, Joseph is Jolene, who is the son of the main character, Jotaro. But before then, there's not really a huge, like, competent female presence. As I would say there's like Lisa in part 2, but they're not as substantial as a lot of the main characters.
then that gets us into, you know, do you pick up a minor female character just to have a female character in the game when they weren't really important, or do you stick with characters who were actually important in the series?
So it's funny you say that, because the series actually did do that, where they took a like pseudo background character. There was, I'm trying to find who it was, but essentially what happened was Midler. So this character Midler shows up and attacks them, but you never actually really see her as a character. You only see her stand. But they went back and they added her as a character. They actually had Araki, the creator of the series, create a design for her just so she could be in the game, so they could increase the number of women that are present.
So that's going to bring us to like 3 or 4.
Yeah. Yeah, there's probably 3 or 4 women in this, unfortunately.
I mean, this is still the 90s, barely.
Yeah.
I don't want to just forgive an entire gaming generation because of when it happened, because you definitely, I mean, look at Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. You had plenty of female characters in there.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a challenge really with every fighting game. But I think the fact that Part 6 is really female-dominated, I think helps balance things out a bit. Though still, it's still in the favor, of course, men. But it's also, it's literally Shonen Jump is a magazine for teenage boys. That's what Shonen means.
Well, now this podcast is officially educational.
There you go.
Does the jump mean anything?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, actually, if it's supposed to mean anything or if it just is like a word that they thought sounded cool. Jump.
Honestly, I can see it going either way.
Yep. It's just, yeah, it seems to just be the noun jump.
So overall, what do you think this game really gets right looking at JoJo's Bizarre Adventure?
I would say the art style. Like, the characters are very clear. I mean, graphics for the time, I think we're good. And it really does convey this idea of how direct a stand fight is, that you, the stand user, and the stand itself are really heavily involved, and that there's got to be this direct connection. It's not just a pure fighting game where it's just you doing everything and the stand showing up for fighting attack, special attacks. I like that they actually consistently show up to do different moves, because that is really one of the most unique elements that is in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is the stands.
And one of the things I really liked about that was you can't just have him out the whole time. You've got to bring him out at strategic times, use him well. I mean, essentially your special meter here is using those stands.
Yep.
So understanding how to use them properly is pretty much an art form in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's definitely a really unique thing that really captures the spirit of the series well.
Then what do you think this game really gets wrong?
Well, I think, like I said, I think there really could have been an opportunity to include more characters. I mean, it's a fighting game, so it's always going to be bare bones in content. And it's hard to know without playing it a lot more, just from a mechanical, just obviously the genre has evolved. There's always a level of unapproachability just for these kind of games compared to stuff like Smash Brothers or modern fighting games that really give you options. So I would just say, yeah, it would have been great if they had more fan service in like a literal sense, in that they did more to embrace the actual nature of the series. Because besides one character, there's really nothing that acknowledges part 1 and 2 of how this is the third part of an ongoing series.
And as much as I have both forgiven and berated fighting games for not having a story, I wish this had a little bit of a story in it. I mean, you do have the super story mode in the PlayStation version, but I mean, I would have liked just some super basic thing.
Yeah. I mean, not every game can be Mortal Kombat, though, where it has like a really extensive story mode, unfortunately. Or Smash Brothers, as you said.
Yeah, but I mean, they could have had maybe an ending screen per character or something.
Yeah, for sure. But again, that's what I'm saying, is that there was a level of like really polish and fan service that really could have taken the game over the top to serve as like a JoJo game. that some of the later games get.
Then if you had somebody who wanted to get into JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, would you give them this game as a bit of a primer course?
I would say probably not. It really hasn't aged that well. I mean, even at the time, it wasn't reviewed as like a spectacular game. So, and not to mention that there's a much more updated game, the All-Star Battle. If they really want to do a JoJo fighting game, that's a much better choice.
For me, fighting games are always in a weird spot here to answer this question, because you can have a quick, real quick, real overview of a lot of characters all in one spot, but you don't really get too much about any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, maybe if I just wanted to get somebody in, like, super, super basic, here's who the characters are.
Yeah.
But it would pretty much, for me, just be people who are into fighting games from this era anyway.
Yeah, like, that's the thing, is if you want to play a retro fighting game from this era, just play Marvel vs. Capcom 2, especially if you want, like, this big, like, crazy over-the-topness. You know, like, it's competing with Street Fighter 3, Mortal Kombat. Like, this was really the era when fighting games really started to get into the position that led to the modern style fighting games. And so this is just not a fighting game that really keeps up. And if it didn't have this JoJo identity, I'm sure no one would ever talk about this game.
No, I mean, this is one. I mean, it's a solid little fighting game, but it doesn't really have anything too, too special about it that you can't get in one of the, you know, main fighting game series, which, quite frankly, are a lot cheaper and easier to find.
Because
this thing is expensive. Definitely, if you want to play this, find an emulator and play it that way. Or burn it for Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Definitely burn the Dreamcast version, because that is the way to go. You know, as Capcom games of the 90s are, just don't get the PlayStation version of anything.
Yeah.
But, like, just a loose disc of the Dreamcast version is like $60 right now.
Oof.
And up over 100 for the PlayStation version.
Oh, God. See, that's why I never got into retro gaming.
I know. I mean, the key is to get into retro gaming while everything's cheap, and I've probably got a few years on you, so I had a head start.
Fair enough.
Or you can just get the Japanese version, where a loose copy of the disc is $14.
Oh, that's not bad. Maybe I'll do that. Just learn Japanese.
I mean, it works for your podcast anyway.
It's true. Yeah, I talked about in the latest episode how it would be really great to be able to, in Japanese, to be able to pull, like, the sales data.
So that is your new mission. You have to learn Japanese.
God. All right, I will consider that challenge one day.
You learn Japanese and I'll learn Russian.
Okay. Sounds like a fair deal.
So, David, it's been great having you on. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
So, you can follow me on my podcast, Shonen Flop, where every episode we look at mangas that didn't make it big. Our latest episode, we talk about the Dungeons & Dragons-inspired series Dark Mage, which is kind of this really crazy series where it's about this, like, warrior guy who gets kind of kidnapped by a wizard to save another, like, universe. And it was just quite the show, and these people have the craziest hair. That episode actually just went live, so if you're listening, you can find us on shonenflop.com, and I'd really appreciate, though, if you guys can follow us on our social media at shonenflop podcast on Facebook and Twitter, or leave us a review on iTunes. That helps a lot with us getting rated higher on iTunes Store, which leads to more people listening to our show.
And of course, we'll have links to all that down in the show notes, because it's so much easier than trying to spell things.
Oh, yes, for sure.
I mean, I listened to a little bit of your show on the drive home today, and it's a really fun listen, so everybody really should check it out.
I am honored. Thank you so much for listening to it. Yeah, that last one was a fun one as well. I'd love to have you on the show sometime, by the way, if you want. It's only about half an hour's worth of reading, because it's only, you know, like a 18-chapter series. So if you're ever interested, just let me know.
Well, we'll have to figure out a way to pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, if you want to hear more from me, just head on over to playcomics.com, where you can find a link to the Twitter, and you can find a link to the Facebook group and stuff. Or, you mean, just go there, click links. It's so much easier. If you want to hear some other wonderful geeky shows, head on over to GunnaGeek.com, where you can just check out lots of other geeky shows. The lineup keeps changing, and honestly, we recorded this one, I'm going to say, weeks ago, so who knows? They probably added another show by now, and if they didn't, they should have.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to help support the show, you can head on over to Patreon. Just look for Play Comics, where for just $1 a month, you can get, I'm pretty sure I have finally decided, you can get the episodes as soon as they're edited, instead of waiting for when they're going to properly come out. Because if they're done, why not let people hear them earlier? I don't know. We'll see. That's probably going to be a thing. And if you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character.
That's how you do it.
There it is. All right. I had a cough stuck in my throat and it didn't want to come out, but then it did. So the world could be good again.